But people come and they say, I really want to eat healthy, but I have a sweet tooth and I have no self-discipline or I have no willpower. And so that's another thing that people believe. And if you just tell them, you know, yes, you do, mm-hmm. right? You're just, you're helping them reinforce all the reasons because they're going to now go and marshal all the troops, all the reasons why you're wrong and they're right mm-hmm. because we're attached to our self-image. So like you and I, sounds like we have different nutritional philosophies, but it sounds like what we're doing right now is what I would call dialogue as opposed to debate.
Yes, I like it.
In other words, this is not zero sum. Like we're not going to walk away going, which words did I win and which words did he win?
Right.
You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch. Thank you for checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. This week, we are very proud to bring you an interview episode, but before we get into the episode, we just wanted to thank you all for coming back and checking in with us, listening, subscribing to the podcast, and we really appreciate all of those reviews and comments, appreciate you engaging with not just us, but also the people that we're interviewing, who are all extremely intelligent and very knowledgeable people that are on social media that are very accessible to you. We're just kind of introducing you to them. So by all means, go and check them out. We have all the information you need for every single episode in our show notes that we put on our website, addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. And Nick would absolutely be chiming in here right now and telling you about like all of our shop and affiliate links in, on our website, but he is currently struggling to even speak because he got himself a cold.
Yeah, I don't know if it's laryngitis or what, but
this is the first time I think I've ever heard you lose your voice.
Yeah, it's been a long, I can't remember the last time.
He came home like 2 days ago whispering.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, you don't need to whisper around me. The baby's asleep, but you don't have to whisper. I'm an adult. You can talk in normal voices. I thought you were just taking like dad role to the next level.
I know. It's the guy you hear on the interview today is going to not sound like this guy right now. So you guys will definitely be able to tell the difference. I want you to tell them about who we're interviewing today.
Yeah, so we have a really, I think this is in really anticipated for me, and I know you can talk about this, but it's a little bit a different situation for you. We have an interview from Howard Jacobson, and Howard is an extremely accomplished podcaster, health coach, and he's actually co-authored multiple books, some of which, if you have read, you might recognize, but they're specifically plant-based nutrition. Mm-hmm. So the China study is like one of the biggest, probably,
right.
Probably like the biggest in general.
Yes.
But like one of the top publications around plant-based.
Yes, and he's worked with the author of the China study.
That's cool.
T. Colin Campbell, T. Colin Campbell and our guest today, Howard Jacobson, have co-authored several books, which we'll talk about in the interview. So as you kind of alluded to, I was somewhat apprehensive because you guys know that if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, that I'm a very dedicated omnivore.
Yes.
I like participating in acquisition of my own meat and protein. Mm-hmm. But we also love, veggies.
Yeah.
You know, you being a former vegan and me being a proponent of vegetables being the vast majority of your diet.
Yep.
I think that it still made me a little apprehensive because I was worried that in this guy who has written multiple books, I knew that I was going to be.
You could be schooled.
Exactly.
For sure.
But that's good. That's kind of why we do these podcasts. So
yeah.
We're not going to give anything away. I want to get into this this episode because it was not pleasantly surprised because it makes me feel like he was going to try to, you know, like you said, school me. But you guys will hear that I shouldn't have been worrying. So
yeah, Well, I will say, like, usually you think of, like, a vegan spokesperson or advocate, and you think of someone that's going to push that lifestyle on you, and I think people get really defensive. So the way that he comes at it, I'm super excited to hear about, yeah. because hopefully what he brings to the table for anybody like us who is absolutely supportive of plant-based, maybe we don't practice it every single day ourselves, but we appreciate it, especially me. I'm excited, so let's listen. So without further ado, let's jump into this interview with Nick in his normal voice interviewing Howard Jacobson.
My guest today is a podcaster, health coach, and co-author of multiple books on the plant-based diet. I'm very excited to welcome Howard Jacobson to the Addicted to Fitness podcast. Thanks for joining me today, Howard.
A pleasure, Nick. I look forward to our conversation.
Me too. I was actually referred to you from a past ATF guest, Dr. Glenn Livingston, and I noticed that both of you have PhDs in obviously different fields, but you both had challenges in adulthood with probably reaching that overweight category in that BMI index. And I was interested to hear how you kind of avoided reaching the obesity kind of category.
Honestly, it was very easy to become overweight. Mm-hmm. I was eating a pretty standard Western diet. I was having a lot of fried foods. I was eating a lot of animal products, a lot of processed foods. But I was, you know, very fond of chocolate, of mm-hmm. cake, of cookies. It's, you know, unless you're an Olympic athlete training 16 hours a day and preferably half of that in a freezing pool, it's really hard to not gain weight when you're eating a diet that's completely unnatural to the human body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I was always pretty active. I played sports. I've never really gone a long time without at least being in some sort of recreational league or playing on weekends or doing things. So I never sort of couch potatoed. But I was, you know, a new father, had young kids who were very demanding, mm-hmm. eat as I could. And rather than like put things away in the fridge, it was just easier to eat the whatever they left.
I'm finding that out also. We have a 10-month-old here, so it's finding out. Luckily, she's with our knowledge, both me and my wife, we try to stick to the whole food. So usually her food's a little better off than probably, you know, when the processed food that you were talking about. But I understand because a lot of listeners know that I was right at that stage too, just, you know, eating whatever was available. And usually, unfortunately, when the cheapest things are usually the worst things for you.
Right. Well, it's, you know, it's sort of designed that way in a really perverse way that if we look at just the way our agricultural system is set up, what gets subsidized are things like, you know, cane sugar, corn syrup, and that all that, you know, the United States produces about twice as many calories per person as the government recommends that we consume. Mm-hmm. So all that extra production has to go somewhere. And we've got a wonderful capitalist system that has a finely honed marketing machine. And every company is trying to increase its market share by selling more. And the result, with no one pulling the levers, like there's no evil genius in charge of it. But the result is as if somebody was trying to make us fat.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because you see how the quote unquote, I know the food pyramid when I was growing up, I know they call it My Plate now, but it's interesting to see how that's evolved over the years. And it seems to be, like you said, a lot of, especially when it was the food pyramid, a lot of the where they recommended the most seemed to be some of those refined processed foods down at the bottom. Not quite like, obviously they wouldn't recommend fried foods, but things that would maybe be a little bit more, you know, probably spike your insulin, spike your blood sugar, things like that. And I'm interested in getting your interpretation because you also co-authored a book called The Low Carb Fraud. And I think when people think about items that would do that, maybe spike their blood sugar and spike their insulin, they usually put it in the carb category. Is that something that maybe is a misconception?
Yeah. So before I talk about the low carb fraud, I want to lay the framework with another book that I co-authored with the same main author, T. Colin Campbell, mm-hmm. called Whole, Rethinking the Science of Nutrition. And the basic premise of that book is that the way we think about and talk about nutrition is really flawed. So if you ever studied anything around nutrition, you probably studied like, what does vitamin C do? Oh, it prevents scurvy. What about vitamin B2? Oh, beriberi. Vitamin D, rickets, right? So we learned that these vitamins are basically like little pills, mm-hmm. and that in order to eat healthy, we need to get these vitamins into us. We need to get these important nutrients, and nothing else really matters. So then we can have a whole industry based on, well, if tomatoes have lycopene, then why don't we just give people lycopene pills? Or let's give them vitamin E pills because we know that high levels of vitamin E are protective against certain types of heart disease, mm-hmm. and so on. And we find out in study after study that when we fragment food and we take out what we think is the important stuff, it would be the same thing like deciding that what's really great about Beethoven's Ninth is all the B flats. And why don't we just take out all the B flats and people could listen to them all at once and save a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was an incredible act of hubris that humans thought we could figure out what was important in food and what wasn't. And along with that strategy of breaking everything into little pieces, we then came up with this idea of, well, we're going to divide food into carbs, proteins, and fats. Mm-hmm. And you've never eaten a carb in your life. You've never eaten a protein in your life. You've never eaten a fat in your life. We eat food.
Right.
And so the minute we give it these names and we think we know what we're talking about, we are confusing ourselves. So, you know, basically there are four sources of calories in food. There's carbohydrate, fat, protein, and alcohol. And each of them behaves differently in the body, and the body needs them all in different quantities at different times, in different amounts for different purposes, and at different stages of life. So when we talk about low carb, we're basically talking about high protein and or high fat, mm-hmm. because you know either that or we're starving. Because we need to get calories from one of those things, and I don't know anyone who recommends that we get the majority of our calories from alcohol.
Right,
right. That's somewhere where we all pretty much agree.
Right, of course.
So the issue. So when you talk about things like spiking our blood sugar or our insulin, actually protein is shown to have the highest insulin spike, much higher than even refined carbohydrates. That's not widely known. It's not widely published. But here's the real problem. What are we talking about when we say carb? Now the shorthand is cookies, crackers, donuts, pretzels, waffles, pancakes, pizza crusts, hamburger buns. And so we're going to leave all that stuff off. But really, a carbohydrate is simply a type of molecule that the body preferentially uses for fuel, mm-hmm. right? Human beings are meant to run on carbohydrates. We have carbohydrate receptors on our tongues, which, you know, sugars are carbohydrates. So if we weren't meant to eat carbohydrates, why would nature have bothered to give us a sweet tooth, to give us the ability to sense very, very minute changes in caloric density based on carbohydrate? Like a 310 calorie apple tastes sweeter than a 280 calorie apple. And if you look at like a true carnivore, like a cat, they have protein receptors. They can taste meat. We don't taste meat. If you just boil a piece of chicken or a piece of beef, most people are going to find that pretty grim. So clearly human beings are meant to run on carbohydrates. Now, we're not meant to run on refined, processed, factory-made, fat-laden, salt-enhanced, sugar-enhanced, artificial flavor, artificial color, artificial preservative-enhanced carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. So to say I'm low-carb and to categorize sweet potatoes, bananas, carrots, peppers, cauliflower, chard, squash with donuts and hamburger buns is simply going to confuse people and make people scared of foods that are very, very good for them.
Yeah, it's somewhat dishonest. I see what you're saying in that kind of putting them in the same category because you lose out because that one food is vitamin rich and one food is vitamin poor. So it's I see how the category lumping them together can definitely be a detriment to people who are trying to figure out nutrition, because like you said, it is a complex issue for sure.
Right. So the first, you said you feed your child whole foods. So the first thing I would say is, are you feeding your child food or artificial fragments of food glued together with pleasure enhancing chemicals?
I like to believe we're doing whole foods. We do vegetables. You know, we do, obviously we do purees. She does get some purees, but they're usually whole food, whole fruits, whole vegetables, also some whole food items for either. We still do animal products also. So we usually stick to that. We try to stay away from processed food, but I know and it's a shame that we result to convenience, but there are some items she gets that are processed. I'll willingly admit that.
Right. But my point is, like, that's the distinction we should make, rather than, oh, this is low carb or this isn't low carb. It's much more empowering to say, is this a whole food? And, you know, by whole food, I don't mean like, you know, you eat it off of the tree. Like, you know, if it's a nut, you definitely want to take the shell off.
Right.
If it's a banana, I highly recommend peeling it.
Yep.
But it's like as it came from the plant.
Yes.
And the processing is minimal, appropriate, and what you could do in your kitchen, you know, if you're not Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Right. No. Right. And that makes sense.
That's the key distinction.
Right. So and so because I know with different types of lifestyles. Do you think it's because with the plant-based diet, I know that's a lot of the especially the books that you've written are based on plant-based nutrition. Is there a definition that you would give plant-based nutrition? Because I think some people hear that phrase and maybe are somewhat confused if it's because they've heard of vegetarian, they've heard of vegan, they've heard of, like you said, people who are raw, who eat a raw diet possibly. What would your definition of plant-based be?
Right. So I say plant-based instead of vegetarian or vegan for a couple of reasons. One is I want to talk to people about scientific evidence in health, not about issues of individual ethics or morality. So if we say vegan, and then we're talking about people who believe in not wearing leather or in, like, I can have Oreos as long as it's made with vegetable oil instead of lard.
Right.
That's not a conversation I want to have with the general public.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that, as you know, as I hinted, you can be, you know, Coca-Cola is vegan, Oreo cookies are vegan. There are vegan restaurants popping up that serve, you know, amazing mac and cheese and cheeseburgers. Like, I challenge you to eat some of the plant-based burgers that are out in the market these days and not be fooled if nobody told you.
Yeah, I know. I've heard news stories about it recently. I can't remember they have a phrase for the burger, but I know they say it's basically, you can't taste the difference.
Yeah. And, you know, and your heart won't be able to tell the difference either, more or less. Right. So it's not, we're not talking about optimal human health.
Right.
So when I say whole food plant-based, I'm talking about incredible amounts of evidence from epidemiology, which is looking at sort of incidence of health and disease across cultures, looking at laboratory studies, looking at clinical trials, looking at cohorts that have been followed for 50, 60 years. There is no question that human beings thrive on a diet of mostly plants.
Right.
So that's essentially what I mean by a plant-based diet. So whether you have 5% meat or 10% meat, and by which I include dairy and eggs as well, is just basically, you know, liquid meat or meat in a shell, appears to be, you know, more or less something the body can accommodate. So it's like a little shock that the body can deal with most of the time. It's not great for us. It causes inflammation. It leads to C-reactive protein. It messes our gut biome up. But if we, you know, if we limit it to what people, traditional people, peasants around the world would eat when they couldn't afford to have, you know, freezers stocked with meat or go out every night, they would have, you know, maybe 10% of their calories from animal products.
Interesting, because now, and obviously I might have a wrong impression, someone like you being an expert, Do you think, especially in different climates, different geographical reasons, carbs were more of a harder to come by, especially in like different climates and things that, so those people had to rely on more protein sources because they couldn't grow certain types of, and when I say carbs, fruits or vegetables, that's what I'm referring to. I'm sorry, but.
Sure. Yeah, it's a hard pattern to get out of.
I know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, wherever you live, there are certain things that are going to be easier to get than others. I would posit that animals are almost always the hardest thing to get.
Yeah,
because they tend to run away or fight back.
Right.
And like the broccoli in my garden is very docile by comparison.
That's true. Except
for now, you can certainly look at people like the Inuit who live in a region where they can't grow food, so the only way they can survive is on fish and fish products.
Right.
And we can say, well, yeah, human beings are incredibly adaptable. I mean, we have people living to 70 or 80 on the worst diet the world has ever seen in this country. So right. We can certainly survive on it. There's a myth that the Inuit didn't have heart disease, which is a myth and which has been disproved. They live about 10 years longer than other Canadians, and other Canadians aren't eating a particularly healthy diet. So I think if someone wants to know what's the healthiest diet for humans, let's not look at outlier cases, but let's look let's not look at negative outliers, people who are forced into something and are leading a suboptimal existence because of it. Let's look at the people who live where humans evolved to live and who are living into their 90s and 100s with vigor at greater rates than anywhere else in the world. Let's look at what they're eating.
No, and, that's a great approach.
Italy, Sardinia, mm-hmm. Costa Rica, Peninsula, Nicoya Peninsula, Okinawa, Japan. And there they're eating very simple diets with some animal products, but not a ton. And, you know, so meat is not like they're ethical vegans. They would have eaten meat if they could have gotten it because preferentially it's got more calories. They like the taste. Mm-hmm. It's a very communist food. You know, like you kill a big animal and you've got to share it with everyone because there's no refrigeration. Right. So it brings community together. It allows men to go and get out their aggression without poking each other's eyes out. There's a lot of social benefit to traditional societies doing some hunting.
Right.
But the irony is, they can't afford to hunt unless they have a good stable of plant crops to feed them, because hunting is high energy and, right. and low reward. So it's like we can do that mostly it was done for sport and pleasure and sexual selection. Like whoever came back with the biggest carcass, you know, that guy was sexy.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really for the calories. Because without the plant calories, you couldn't really sustain a hunting culture.
Interesting. As I haven't looked at it from that perspective, but I could see how that could be definitely interpreted that way. Now, I'm curious to hear what you think about some, especially documentaries are huge nowadays. Netflix has seemed to take over the whole everybody's viewing preferences. What about documentaries, things like specifically like What the Health? And I'm interested to hear your type of impressions on the campaigning for the vegan lifestyle that a documentary like that does. Do you think it's a positive idea on making people more interested in trying to do a more vegan lifestyle, or does it have the opposite effect?
Well, you're going to hear gasps from all of my vegan friends, but I've never actually watched What the Health.
Okay, good.
And I have a lot of friends who are in it.
So, oh, okay. Interesting.
So this allows me to duck that particular question, honestly, okay. In that I haven't seen it. Here's what I'll say, though, in general about media,
mm-hmm.
is assume, like your listeners should assume that I have an agenda.
Right.
And yeah. they should assume that you have an agenda and Kip Anderson of What the Health has an agenda. And the question is not what our agenda is. The question is, what are the facts behind our agenda?
Right.
Because, you know, you can get the same thing on your Facebook feed. You know, you could easily, depending on who you're friends with, find an article at the top of your feed saying that bacon extends human lifespan. And that's science.
Right.
And so what I'd like for people to do is, sure, you know, this is basic, it's entertainment. It can be inspirational, especially when you're talking about individual stories, right? Because all these documentaries are essentially they're marketing pieces, which means that they can't really rely on statistics and studies, because that's not how our brains work.
Yeah, it's not
in terms of a good story. So you take a look at someone, and you know, you can find someone for the magic pill and the keto documentary who has an amazing transformation. We can find lots of people who have adopted plant-based lifestyles and have had amazing transformations. That's how we tell our stories. But behind the stories, we then have to take responsibility for doing some research. And, you know, so I was like, one of the things I liked about, so with the people who did What the Health did another movie beforehand called Cowspiracy.
Right, yes.
And that's another one that's drawn a lot of social media attention and controversy. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they had a page on their website in which they published their data, their sources. So you can go look it up. So when Dave Asprey on his website has a list of sources explaining why a vegetarian or vegan diet is the most dangerous thing in the world, right. And you can go look it up.
Yep.
I did. I looked up all his sources, and I was shocked at the poor quality of them. So, like, you know, he's making sweeping claims that, like, vegetarian children are deathly deficient in B12, and it was a study of one kid. Right. So this is where we should be having the argument, not about, like, was this a good documentary? Like, they're all in the end entertainment.
Right.
And we if we're going to get our information about how to live our lives from entertainment, you know, God help us.
We're in trouble. Yeah. No, that's I love that perspective, because, like you said, you can't just take that and let that dictate your life. You got, like you said, do some follow-up research. And that's the great thing I learned about, you know, going to both my undergrad and my graduate degree were in environmental science. And so it was a lot of research, backing up your sources, looking at the type of research is done, like you already mentioned, epidemiological studies or double-blind placebo-controlled studies, finding out what the gold standard of research is. That's how you can kind of compare and contrast to see where the research may be more stronger. There's stronger information on one side opposed to the other. And then and I think that's kind of where the gap is. A lot of people aren't aware of that. They see headlines and then they just kind of regurgitate them out to anybody that's listening, or regurgitate them out. I shouldn't keep saying that word, but they keep repeating it in their own brain till they convince themselves that that's the truth.
Sure. And another thing that we found from a behavioral perspective is, if you have a point of view that you're attached to and I present a counterfact to it, I am most likely going to reinforce your point of view in your own mind, because where your brain is going to go is, oh dear, that sounds like an attack. Let me come up with more reasons why I'm right.
Right.
So if someone is a ketogenic enthusiast and they watch What the Health, they are going to be reinforced in their ketogenic beliefs.
I see what you're saying. That is another great – and that's – I know when I was doing the research, when I was looking up your bio, your PhD is in, stress management. Is that correct?
That's what the thesis was on. It was in health studies generally. Studies.
So obviously something with your approach, as we're kind of talking about now with your coaching online, obviously kind of changing people's mentality. Maybe being a little bit more kind of flexible with their belief system. Is that a part of something you add to your coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. Because not just like most people come to me, they don't come to me and say, hey, I'm ketogenic, I'm going to pay you a bunch of money to convince me otherwise.
Right.
But people come and they say, I really want to eat healthy, but I have a sweet tooth and I have no self-discipline, or I have no willpower. And so that's another thing that people believe. And if you just tell them, yes, you do, mm-hmm. right? You're just you're helping them reinforce all the reasons, because they're going to now go and marshal all the troops, all the reasons why you're wrong and they're right, mm-hmm. because we're attached to our self-image. So like you and I, sounds like we have different nutritional philosophies, but it sounds like what we're doing right now is what I would call dialogue as opposed to debate.
Yes, I like it.
In other words, this is not zero sum. Like, we're not going to walk away going, which words did I win and which words did he win?
Right. No, that's a great. And that's, unfortunately, there's not more of that. I don't nowadays, you know. But I,
yeah. So what we want to do with people is help them get into a frame of mind in which dialogue is possible. And that means getting them out of defensiveness, getting people out of their sense of shame or guilt or less than-ness, and just open to other perspectives and possibilities, so that we're not trying to, I'm not trying to defend my point of view. If you have evidence that contradicts me, I want to see it and I want to read it.
Right.
Because I understand the how pervasive confirmation bias is. And I don't think that I'm any smarter or any better, or I have a more efficient brain than anyone else. I assume I have the same amazing, flawed human brain, and I'm likely to start believing my own Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And so I have to force myself to continually check and see, like, is there some counterfactual here that would make me reconsider my perspective?
And that's great. That is a great approach to have, because I feel people get, you know, stuck in their kind of mindset and they're not open to other ideas. Like I said, I one phrase, and I hate to say that I create phrases, but I always say one thing I know for sure is that I don't know everything. So and you got to be flexible with your mindset. And I think that it kind of also, it relates to nutrition too. Obviously, we're talking, you know, as you already mentioned, we probably have two different perspectives. But when somebody is kind of conditioned by media, marketing, and a different type of rhetoric that's being pushed out towards them, they can be so confused they can throw their hands up and they don't know which way, which direction to go. When you have somebody who approaches you, or, you know, tries to enlist your services as a coach, is there a lot of your time spent on writing meal plans for them, or is it more kind of explaining more the framework of how they should maybe approach day-to-day nutrition?
Yeah, and actually neither.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big fan of not having meal plans. I'll qualify that by saying, like, I'm a big fan of people not walking around on crutches. However, sometimes people need crutches, and they need crutches for as long as they need them. And when they don't need them anymore, they shouldn't be on them. So one of my favorite books is called Anti-Fragile by Nicholas Nassim Taleb. Mm-hmm. And he talks about fragility as, you know, basically the more things we need to go right for us to be okay, the more fragile we are. And anti-fragile means that we actually improve based on uncertainty and shocks. So a great example of anti-fragility is lifting weights. Because mm-hmm. every time you lift weights, your muscles fail and they grow back stronger. Because right. like, holy cow, what if the next weight's even stronger, heavier than this one? So for me, a meal plan encourages fragility. And I hear this all the time from people that, oh, what I really need to do is plan out all my meals, do all my shopping on Sunday morning, do all my prep for the week on Sunday afternoon, and then I'll be okay. Right, great. What if life throws you a curveball? What if your kid's sick?
Yep.
What if, right? You need to be, we need to teach people how to be robust in and have skills and have internal resources that don't rely on the external world going perfectly. So, and in terms of, like, you know, giving people the basics of nutrition, I'm sure you and I could write out an index card. Mm-hmm. Maybe 30 words that would have everything that anyone needed to know about what to eat and what not to eat.
Right.
And probably 3% of that we would differ, but probably 97% we'd be saying the same things.
Right.
And the difference isn't going to be as important as the similarity. And so the question is not, well, how do we teach people what to eat? The question is, how do we teach people how to deal with social pressure? How to deal with cravings, how to deal with their own inner thoughts. And, you know, from your conversation with Glenn Livingston, who's one of my mentors in that field, mm-hmm. I'm sure your listeners have learned a great deal about how to combat the voices inside us that want us to get us to do the wrong thing, who want us to hit the snooze bar 7 times in the morning instead of getting up and working out,
right.
Who want to snack late at night instead of having a glass of tea or a glass of water and going to bed. So it's really the inner game to me that's about coaching. And it sorrows me a little bit that what passes for health coaching in a lot of places is just giving people information and then just constantly re-motivating them every time you talk to them, like they're a tire with a puncture in it. Hmm. And every time they go away, they're full of motivation. And then 3 days later, they're sitting on the couch binge eating Pringles, and they can't remember why they ever wanted to be healthy in the first place.
Right. So it's more teaching them lessons that they can hold on to, not something that they essentially evaporates after 24 hours.
Yeah, well, it's not even lessons, it's the practice.
Practice,
if you were my personal trainer, mm-hmm. and you came and you gave me a workout routine to do, and every week I didn't do it, you wouldn't expect me to get any gains.
Right.
Right, so the workout here is, like, I'll be coaching someone and they'll say, well, my downfall is this pizza place because my kids like to go there. The school always does things. And I keep going to this pizza place. It's all you can eat. The slices are all there under the heat lamps and I just can't resist. And so she expected me to say, well, you should stop going there. And instead I said, good, I want you to go there tomorrow, sit down and order a salad and not eat any pizza. It's like, are you crazy? I just told you that that's my downfall. I said, good. So let's go lift some weights there. Let's go have a fight through instead of you constantly getting mugged by pizza.
Interesting.
Right. So we take it to the streets. Mm-hmm. And so you want to teach. It's just like any sort of aversion therapy or, just getting used to things.
Yeah.
Is if we're constantly in fear of food sneaking up on us, wrestling us to the ground and jumping into our mouths, then we have no agency. So I really want to teach people that if you want to change your behaviors and your habits, you've got to go do workouts in the same way that you got to lift weights in order to grow muscle.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I guess similar to let's say people that maybe have fears, like phobias, exposing themselves to the source of the phobia. Is that kind of a similar type? Is that what the kind of similarity?
Yeah, because people don't believe that they can say no. You hear this in their language all the time. I have a sweet tooth. Oh, I could never diet. Oh, I've been on every diet. They've all failed. I have no willpower. I guess I just can't. I just love her burgers too much. Mm-hmm. Right? Whatever they're saying, it's a linguistic pattern that I call past permanent. Like they can say it in the past tense, but they're predicting the future with it.
Right.
Right. So, and how are if I just tell people, no, you don't have to be like that. You could be different. They're hearing my words, but it's not sinking in. The only way to know that you're different is to prove it to yourself, is to go out and behave differently.
Yes.
So we don't want someone to take on a challenge that they're not ready for. So when I have people work on their rules, their food rules, I don't say like, okay, I'm never going to eat processed food again. We might pick one meal. Like I just worked with someone who has a problem with stopping at drive-thrus for fast food. And we had set up a rule. She didn't want to do that anymore. So we set up a rule. Okay, no more fast food. And you know what? She's keeping it about 60% of the time, which means she's not keeping it. It's like a suggestion. It's not a rule. Mm-hmm. She's got all sorts of decision fatigue around it. It's causing a lot of stress. So we changed the rule to never eat fast food. Never order fast food from the car. If you want fast food, you got to get out of the car, go into the restaurant, and stand behind the counter and place your order.
Interesting.
So what we want is for people to feel like, yeah, they can follow a rule. They can trust their word. Because most people don't trust their own word around their health behaviors. Mm-hmm. And that corrodes every possible piece of progress you could ever make. If you don't believe that when you say something, you mean it and you can do it. And the only way to help people believe that they can is to give them experiences and have them practice experiences where they keep their word.
Right. No, I see obviously being a personal trainer, like you said, I've seen people when they come in and maybe they can't execute something like a squat or a lunge, And then over time, you know, we keep practicing it. I'm not going to say, okay, so you're not doing lunges. You can't do squats. We don't say that. We practice it. We progress. We have a baseline and we go to progression till, you know, I have clients now that are doing lunges with presses, all kinds of things. So it's like you said, making people apply acting or, you know, some sort of activity to help them show themselves that they are capable of doing it.
Yeah. And I bet, you know, the high point of your life is when that client can do something that they thought they couldn't do.
Right. Absolutely.
And they turn around and you realize they're now a different person.
Yes.
Something has changed, that now what was impossible is possible. And now some part of their brain is going, holy cow, what else did I believe that isn't true?
Yeah, that's right. And it's just an expansion. It's a mind expander. Whenever they have those milestones or they reach those goals, then I think they're more likely to reach further goals. And that, and I'm sure that's something that you've seen with your clients too.
Yeah, talk about it. Talk about replacing negative addictions with positive addictions.
Yes, I love it. Well, Howard, I know we could keep talking because there's a bunch of issues I want to get in, you know, discuss with you. And I wanted to ask you now before, because I know both of us have a couple appointments to jump to. Would you be interested in coming back on in a future episode?
Absolutely. This is fun.
Excellent. So before you leave, though, I want you to give, if you had one piece of advice, some health advice, or overall advice you'd love to give our listeners, I'd like you to share that right now.
Okay. It's this, that everything that you are doing that you don't want to be doing in terms of eating foods you don't want to eat, in terms of behaviors like being addicted to Facebook or sitting on the couch watching stuff, anything that you are avoiding that you know you should be doing, it's because of feelings that you don't want to feel. So the royal road to changing your habits is to begin small, slowly, step by step, gently, gingerly, to become okay with discomfort. And one of the best, easiest ways to become comfortable with discomfort is through physical activity, mm-hmm. is through gently pushing yourself, is to doing one more push-up, is to go for a walk and go slightly faster than you're used to. So get used to it. We call it in our program, we call it vitamin P for pain, which is not a great name, but vitamin D for discomfort was taken. Gotcha. But if you get to be okay with discomfort, then there is nothing that you will be unable to try.
I love it. Great piece of advice. Howard, please take some time right now to share all your contact information so people can get to know you and contact you personally.
Yeah. So I co-founded a startup called WellStart Health, which you can find at wellstarthealth.com. And we offer programs for companies, for their employees to reverse chronic disease. And so the companies save a lot of money on healthcare. And we also have a consumer division where we do these 12-week intensives in which we help people really adopt healthy habits. And so a lot of what I've been talking about, that we've been talking about in the last few minutes, are some of the strategies that we adopt to help people really make big changes in their lives. I have a podcast. We just released episode 283 yesterday. It's called Plant Yourself. You can find it at plantyourself.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm 53 years old, so I'm not a digital native. So if you're expecting daily posts, you'll be disappointed.
We will make sure to put all those links and contact information on our weekly show notes so people can find them there. But I want to thank you once again, Howard, for coming on with me. And I look forward to you coming back on the podcast and talking more about all things health and fitness.
It will be a great pleasure, Nick. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Howard Jacobson and hope that you appreciated a lot of the information that he brought to the table. I think we're both in a kind of a, we walked away with a bunch of information. I know just from listening to the end of the interview, it sounds like your fears were definitely not needed.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, and Howard, like I mentioned before in the preview or the before that we got into the interview, is that I had the feeling going into it that he was going to try to convert me to veganism or convince me that plant-based diet was the best diet there was and everybody should be doing it. But he takes a really great approach to saying the research he's looked at, that it works the best for him, and that he also has a kind of a flexible definition of plant-based,
yeah.
which I think is great too.
Yeah.
You know, maybe allowing certain animal products, I mean, depending on what nutrient deficiencies you have. So
yeah.
I think that's a really great kind of flexible way of approaching it.
Yeah, well, he kind of invites people to really make it your own. And I think people get really intimidated with this idea that it's all or none and that there's no flexibility. And it's such a far departure for so many people that they don't even want to consider it
because right.
it's too much. It's too right. hard.
And I think one thing we agreed on in the episode, but that I'll reiterate now, is that the majority of your diet should be plants.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It should be plant-based.
Vegetables
yeah.
specifically. You know, fruits obviously have a place, but sometimes they can be, depending on their sugar content or anything like that. But
yeah.
veggies, and then because veggies can have protein and fat and things like that
yeah.
with avocados
there's
and coconuts.
There's so many options. Like, it's not just salads, people.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, we talked about meat is much more nutrient-dense, so you could have less meat but get the same amount of nutrients
yep.
than when you have with plants. So I think the majority of our diet should be plant. I like that idea.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it kind of goes along. I know we've talked in a previous episode, which we'll make sure we link to in the show notes, about the pegan
yep.
diet.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, in a way, that's like almost a starting point for people who are interested, and maybe they can like change the ratios of the vegan side and then that paleo, like more yeah. meat, nutrient dense kind of foods.
Right. And I think the real key takeaway is that, and Howard talked about it, and we talked about how he got into discovering this lifestyle, is that processed food is really the culprit.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's vegan processed food or paleo processed food, I'm sure that exists, paleo processed food, hot dogs, duh. But anyways, you need to rid your diet of that mostly. That's the real key. Once you come back to whole foods with whole ingredients, you start getting back into having stuff that's more nutritious. And then you can start determining whether you want to take a more vegan approach or a vegan approach or a vegetarian approach. So
yeah,
I really enjoyed talking with Howard. He was a referral from Dr. Glenn Livingston, who's got his hands on a lot of the podcasts as of late.
I know.
Which is awesome. So as Shannon mentioned, guys, check out his website, plantyourself.com, and his podcast, Plant Yourself Podcast. He has a lot of, I mean, he's up to
such a good name.
He's almost up to 300 episodes. So he's got, talks to a lot of good people too. It looks like most of his episodes are interview based. So
yep.
He was a great person to talk to, and I look forward to I'm sure we're going to be having him on the podcast again, because as I mentioned, he was a great person to talk to. I'm also going to refer you guys to another podcast because that's what we do around here. We love us some podcasts.
That's the great thing about podcasts.
Yes.
Like all of the, you find so many like webs that connect.
And it has a lot of information that are very similar to the topics we talked about with Howard. It's episode 1,175
crazy.
Of the Joe Rogan Experience. It's from this past week with Chris Kresser and Dr. Joel Kahn. Chris Kresser, who we've talked about on the podcast before, is a leader in the fields of ancestral health, paleo nutrition, and functional medicine. And Dr. Joel Kahn is one of the top cardiologists who's also a vegan and believes in the plant-based diet. So
mm-hmm.
they have a really good discussion about from the scientific perspective of both types of nutrition or approaches to nutrition.
Nutrition.
Wow. I'm trying to talk when I don't have a voice. That's the problem right now. But it was really great, guys, and I highly recommend you guys listen, because in the end, they, much like I just mentioned, they agree that eating more whole foods, cutting out fast food and processed food and refined carbs, that's really what's going to help improve
yeah.
your health.
Yeah, and I think because, you know, like Joe Rogan's podcasts usually go like a lot more in-depth. I mean, they're super long, and this one's
Almost 4 hours, yeah.
Definitely, if this was a topic that you really liked hearing about from Howard Jacobson, check his podcast out, obviously.
Yes.
But then also check out this particular episode. Again, that's 1175. I can't even fathom more than 1,000 episodes.
And they're mostly 3 hours long.
I know. It's incredible. But it's definitely going to be a more in-depth kind of both sides. So if you're – even maybe if you disagreed with this podcast and you just kind of want to hear more about that kind of back and forth, little both-sided
– from experts.
Yeah, from the actual experts. I feel like they're always the ones that can not argue – but they can debate things in such a great way. So I think that episode does it well.
Yeah, and I've listened to the episode, and I highly agree. And like I said, the takeaway is that we need to get back to the more of a whole food diet. And then you can kind of make your choice then from there if you're going to take the vegan approach or the paleo approach.
Yeah, so definitely let us know what you thought of this episode and this interview. We hope you will check out our guest, Howard Jacobson, on his website, plantyourself.com. And definitely check out his podcast by the same name. And we also would appreciate if you share your thoughts in a review. You can do that on the iTunes. They're right on iTunes.
Yep.
Or you can do it under the podcast app.
Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, the Apple Podcast app. And then you can also feel free to share this with a friend.
Oh, that's really what we love.
Yeah, we love the shares. So do we have anything else?
I'm good.
This has been another edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast, and we'll check you next time.
For all things Addicted to Fitness, you can check out our website, addictedtofitnesspodcast.com. You can also give us a follow on Twitter, @TheATFPodcast, and like and follow the Addicted to Fitness podcast Facebook page. Last but not least, please give us a rating and review in the iTunes store. Thanks.